Thank you, it looks beautiful this morning. Recently, I was out running errands, and I decided to stop for lunch on my way home. Now, I was seated at a particular table, and I noticed that two men were sitting across from me. I would say they were in their middle 20s, and they were engrossed in conversation. That is, one was doing the talking, and the other one was doing the listening. Now, the one doing the talking, he was upset about something. He mentioned the injustice, the misunderstanding of whatever it was that had happened. And he was obviously hurt by what had occurred. Now, I could tell by the expression on the face of the one doing the listening that he did not recall this event in that way as his friend did. And finally, he told his friend that he did not think that any harm had been intended. And then he suggested that perhaps he might be overreacting a wee bit. Well, this was not what the friend wanted to hear. It was not what the talker expected to hear from his friend, the listener. He had expected compassion and understanding. Certainly, he had expected his friend to agree with his assessment with what had happened. When I listened to the exchange, and the thought occurred to me, one individual, the talker, he definitely had a problem. The other individual, the listener, he did not see a problem. Clearly there was a difference of opinion. So the question is, what is the problem? What makes something a problem? Was the listener correct when he told his friend that he was overreacting? Is it our attitude or response that allows something to be a problem or not? If attitude is the determining factor, can we solve our problems simply by looking at them differently? In the little book, Short Lessons in Divine Science, Nota Brooks, she tells us that to solve a problem is to get the right answer. Well, isn't that what it is we want? The right answer? Many of you can remember what it was like those days in school, but particularly that time spent in math class. Because, you see, the lessons of math were presented in the form of problems. The math teacher assigned problems to be solved. Now, in the case of those problems, we understood it was possible to solve the problems of math by applying the principle that supported the answer. And we got the right answer according to our ability to work and understand what the principle meant. Now, this does not mean that it was easy. Some of the students, they quickly grasped the principle of mathematics, making short work of solving those problems. Others labored over the problems, struggling to understand and apply the principle. At times, the struggle could be quite frustrating. But looking back, an interesting thing was that many times the frustration was not really directed at the problem. It was understood that the problem had a correct answer. Any frustration was directed at our inability to grasp the principle in order to apply it. when we look at what it is we consider being our problems, we discover that many times they relate to things that seem to be missing in our lives, things that we have considered to be important to the quality of life that we wish to live. Perhaps it is a problem of health, or possibly it is job-related. Or simply we look around us and we don't seem to have too many friends. The talker, the one at the restaurant, he had a problem because he felt that his ideas and his opinions were not being fully appreciated. He told his friend that he was being disrespected, that somehow his value and his self-worth were being called into question. When we are faced with what life brings us, it is very easy for us to make it personal. And when we make something personal, our response comes from that place in consciousness that considers just us, expecting things to happen according to what we think is best. Now, to view life from this awareness means that we look at life with our human faculties, the five senses. They bear witness to what the world has to offer. We hear what others have to say. We see with what the world has to offer. We learn to look at the changing scenes of humanhood. We taste, we touch, and we smell, relying on our personal experience or preference to determine our response. And then we judge. We judge what is happening. And of course, some of it we like, but others, well, not so much. To respond to life from the level of what the five senses tell us, keep us in a state of uncertainty. You see, when we base our attitude of life on the changing scenes of humanhood, we really have nothing to rely on. Here today, gone tomorrow, it does not provide a foundation on which we can build a true understanding of life. We think that we have problems to be solved, and then we weary ourselves trying to make things happen. And in our time of trying to make something happen, we give power to the problem. And in order to solve what we think is our problem, we then get busy trying to find another power to overcome it. We find us looking to the material world, relying on what it calls its power, a material power to solve a problem, the power of medicine, the power of money, or the power of a good education. Perhaps we even give power to the mental thought. You see, we have noticed that when we think in a certain way, and then believe that it is so, that it will take form in our world of experience. But let us consider what it is that we are doing when we work in this way. Remember again about how it was back in school in that math class? We didn't work with the problem to get the answer. We worked with the principle that supported it. To do our work at the level of form and thought is working without a foundation. We may get results, but they're temporary. They do not last. For instance, we may apply the power of medicine to a particular health problem, and we might get some relief. But But the very next day brings yet still another ache or pain. And this time, it is located in another part of the body. So now we must start all over again, trying to find another answer to apply to that particular area. When it comes to our financial needs, we consider that there is power in money. After all, we have heard it said that money talks. And so we busy ourselves. We contemplate the many ways that we might use this wonderful power to meet our material needs. But then one fine day, we discover that we really don't have as much money as we would like to have. So now we go looking for a power that will bring us more money. We really do keep ourselves busy, trying to figure out what is best for us. To work on the level of the problem will not give us the right answer. I'm sure that none of Brooks would caution us not to do this. But she also told us that we are not to be resigned to our hard conditions, to our unsolved problems. Well, what exactly did she suggest that we do? She tells us that to solve our problems, we must take the right attitude toward our environment with its multifold processes. She goes on to say that in order to bring ourselves to this attitude, we are to remember the following. The goal of all growth is the realization of God as the only presence and power. Everyone is on his way to this goal. Some, they are further along than others. Problems vary according to our development. A problem, when rightly met, becomes a stepping stone to greater unfoldment. Well, I think these are truly words of wisdom from our founder. And then she continues on. Many so-called problems, when understood, are no longer hardships, but blessings. Sometimes, more or less quickly, actually according to our faithfulness, we shall realize steadfastly our oneness with the Father. In this realization, there are no problems. Well, do you see the mistake that we have been making? We have tried to solve our problems by applying another problem to overcome them. But Nona Brooks, she is quite clear. There is only one power. The one power is God. And it is this principle that we apply to all of life. When we were frustrated with solving the problems of math, we didn't try to apply one power to algebra, another power to geometry. Nor did we try to manipulate the problem into giving up its answer. We looked to one principle, the one that supports and gives value to the numbers, whether they appear as simple addition or to the advanced courses. This is how we should approach life. Acknowledging the one presence to be the only power. Now remember, Nona Brooks told us that while this is everyone's goal to live in this way, some are further along in understanding than others. But this is also how it was true for us in that math class. Some students quickly grasped the principle, while others continued to struggle. The student who continued to struggle is not as familiar with the principle, but he doesn't give up. He knows that the only solution to the right answer is to work with principle until it is established in his consciousness. Some students are further along the spiritual path than others. And I believe this is because they have worked with the spiritual principle longer than others. You see, a student who is new to the principle of the omnipresence of God, he has not yet learned that he can rely on this presence to do the work. He may still be trying to make something happen by free will, or looking for material power to meet the need. But the one who stays the course, the one that is true to his practice of truth, he will eventually arrive at that place where he can look out on his world and not be moved by its condition. He no longer tries to find a foundation in the changing scenes of humanhood. Nor is he tempted to look for a power to support what is temporary. When we rely on but one power, we discover there really are no problems for us to solve. You see, when we are true to our time of silence, our time of meditation, we discover that we receive the right answer from the presence that supports it. When it comes to healing, H.B. Jeffrey tells us that the best method of healing is to realize that nothing needs to be fixed. To know God as the power of our health, the power of our supply, and our relationships reveals to us what already is. It is a matter of us accepting what is already contained in that finished kingdom. We are told that God created a finished kingdom. There's nothing that can possibly be added to it. And then we read of that storehouse out of which those blessings flow. The receptive attitude, the open heart, receives the blessings that flow into our world, then taking the form to meet the need. There is no need to fix something that God has sent forth. Now remember, Nona Brooks also told us that problems are blessings. And I admit that at first, well, we might not understand how this might be so. So let's think about it. If the main goal of our growth is the realization of God as the only presence and the only power, then we must develop the attitude that accepts this presence and then rely on it to do the work. If we were to live our life free of problems, we would never bother to do this. We would be quite well on our own, doing what we wish to do, being successful, and we would have no need to seek another way of life. And we would not know that there's really just one power. If we demonstrated a healthy body, we could just cruise along thanking our genes and our DNA. If we were to enjoy a sufficiency of supply, we could attribute it to that good job, our family inheritance, or perhaps a good education. We would be experiencing an acceptable level of humanhood, and we would be quite happy with ourselves. Well, what would this have to do with our goal of the realization of God as the only presence and the only power? Absolutely nothing. Healthy bodies and healthy pocketbooks distract us from learning about the reality of us. Mystics, metaphysicians, they tell us that problems are necessary. Life brings us its contrasts so that we may learn the true purpose of our existence. Joe Goldsmith says it this way: problems there must be, because it is these very problems that take from us our reliance on material ways. Let us go back to those individuals, the one in the restaurant. One had a problem, the other one did not. And at the time, I wondered if our attitude is what allows something to be a problem. And if so, can we solve our problems by simply looking at them differently? Can we look at life in another way? Can it really be that easy? Well, I do believe that our attitude, our view of life, is the basis for our response to what life brings us. So if we happen to look around us and we really don't like what we see, that means there is work to be done. No, I don't think it's easy at all for us to do this. It is not easy to take on a different attitude. You see, we must lift our eyes above and beyond our current view of life. And I don't mean those eyes of the five senses. I mean the spiritual eye of discernment. The eye of discernment is the I am within our being. To rely on this eye of discernment means that we must drop our reliance on the testimony of those five senses. The eye of discernment allows us to agree with H.B. Jeffrey that there is nothing to be fixed. I don't think that life was meant to be one of stress and of strain, but this will be our experience until we learn where to go to get the right answer. There is a principle of life that supports and maintains all that makes up that life. The teaching of divine science, it is based on the principle of the omnipresence of God. It is based on wholeness as the truth of our being. It is from this consciousness that we live life as it was meant to be lived. I really don't think it is so much a matter of solving problems, but rather allowing the one presence and the one power to resolve them for us. And it does so according to our reliance on it to do the work. While it might not be an easy journey to get to this place of reliance, we unfold to it as we study and practice the principle we acknowledge to be the truth of us. So let us develop the art of listening. The individual, the one in the restaurant, he heard his friend's complaints, but his role was the one of listener. And in the act of listening, he saw things in a different way than the one who saw a problem. As a result, he was able to ask, could it be that you were overreacting? When we find us responding to something that life brings us, let us pause and ask the question, are we overreacting? And then having done this, we now take on the role of the listener. We listen in an inward way. We perceive with the inner ear, and we discern with the eye divine. And if we are still enough, and if we are quiet enough, we will hear the words, be still and know there is nothing to be fixed. This morning we have the opportunity to practice the art of listening. Would you join me now in our closing meditation? As we quiet ourselves, we find us in that place that receives the still small voice. I am here. There is none else. turn to me, I will turn to you. God is everywhere. Therefore, God is here. Right where I stand, it's holy ground. At any time, in any place, I may stand still and behold his presence. In a time of joy, he is here. In a time of sorrow, he is here. There is no place where God is not. The still small voice tells me this is so. I am with you as you walk through the valley of the shadow of death. I prepare a table before you of spiritual refreshment. Let us rest by the rivers of water that bring forth the fruit in due season. To rest in the Lord is to wait for guidance and direction. They are available to one with the ear that listens. Throughout our week, let us go often to this place of serenity. Do not fear, for I am with you. I go before you accomplishing what is given you to do. You are not alone. Let us rest in our knowing. Be steadfast to our time of meditation, for it is there that we commune with God, and all is well. Amen. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he cause his light to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. Turn within and acknowledge him, so that he may lift your consciousness and give you his peace. Amen.